Utah Grizzlies hockey, it's just fun. Follow the Utah Grizzlies on Facebook for the latest on weekend home games and promotions, or visit utahgrizzlies.com for more. Utah Grizzlies hockey, it's just fun.
The 2015 Sundance Film Festival returns to Utah January 22nd through February 1st. Local registration is now open for a festival pass or ticket package through October 8th. Visit sundance.org/festival. I'm John Ford, and this is Slug Soundwaves, the official podcast of Slug Magazine in Salt Lake City, Utah. Slug, an acronym for Salt Lake Underground, is one of the oldest independent publications in the United States, distributing free, monthly issues about music, art, action sports, and subculture. In this episode, we'll be discussing Pioneer Theater Company and Plan B Theater's Radio Hour. Pioneer Theater Company is the official professional theater group at the University of Utah. Founded in 1962, the nonprofit company has produced a new season every year for the past 52 years, consisting of a mix of classical theater, musicals, contemporary dramas, and comedic plays. This year, the company will be producing the 25th annual Putnam County Spelling Bee, the Rocky Horror Picture Show, One Man, Two Governors, Peter and the Starcatcher, Alabama Story, The Crucible, I Hate Hamlet, and The Music Man. Today we talk with Pioneer Theater Company's Artistic Director, Karen Asenberg, about her role with the company and the season they have this year. Karen, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm so glad to be here.
All right. Well, tell us a little bit about the theater company, and then we'll talk about your position.
Well, as our sort of official wording states, we do a really wide variety of work that hopefully appeals to a wide variety of people. And while I realize everything isn't for everybody, I hope there is something for everybody.
Indeed. So how did you get started with the company?
This is only the beginning of my third year here in Salt Lake City. I moved here 3 years ago from New York, where I had been coming as a freelance director and choreographer to Pioneer Theater. I was here and I directed the production that they did of Rent and Next to Normal. Mm-hmm. So some of the more contemporary pieces were kind of my ballywick, but I'm excited to be sort of in charge of the whole kit and caboodle nowadays.
Yeah. So does our theater atmosphere here in Salt Lake compare good with New York's?
Yeah, it does, actually. I mean, given that Salt Lake is a slightly smaller city, it has a proportionately wildly vibrant theater scene, and it's really exciting to be a part of it.
Indeed. Have you seen anything amazing since you've gotten here?
I've seen lots of amazing work. Plan B, our friends at Plan B do really extraordinary stuff. But
indeed.
Everything, the music, the ballet, the opera, the symphony, it's incredible to have all of that here in Salt Lake.
Well, tell us a little bit about this upcoming season you guys have here.
We have some really special events this season. For the first time ever, we're doing a concert version of a musical, which basically means we're doing the whole show, but less sets and fewer costumes than we might normally produce. It's three performances of the Rocky Horror Picture Show, and it is going to be quite the event. We're doing the whole thing up. If you come, you can buy your prop kit and throw your hot dogs and cover your head with newspaper and light the light so that they can find their way to the Frankenstein place.
Indeed. Are you encouraging people to dress up?
We are totally encouraging people to dress up.
Wonderful.
Even our staff is dressing up. Everybody cannot wait.
I was going to say, I don't know if it would be an official production if you didn't invite the crowd to fully participate.
We also have a special, unique, I think, for us, artist coming to perform the role of Frankenfooter, Tony Vincent, who some people may know. He was one of the finalists on the second season of The Voice. He also created the role of St. Jimmy in American Idiot, Green Day's musical. So Tony's coming out. He's going to play Frankenfooter, and I am thrilled to have somebody like that coming and joining us at Pioneer Theater.
Wonderful. Any other specific productions that you'd like to throw some more in for?
The other kind of fun one that's a different ilk for us is One Man, Two Governors. It's based on a very classical play. However, it's a very, very contemporary translation. It was recently on Broadway, but one of the really unique pieces of it is that the play is intermixed with a skiffle band who covers the scene changes but also works their way into the telling of the story. And we have sort of put together our own skiffle band with local musicians, which is a new thing for us at Pioneer, but I'm really excited to have these local musicians performing on our stage, and I think it will be fun for our audience to have that kind of music.
Yeah, that sounds really great. We have a really eclectic group of musicians here in Salt Lake. Our music scene's quite quite amazing. So.
It's unbelievable. And the director and the musical director were like, how are we going to do this? How's this going to work? And they both came out and met these musicians and were blown away. So I think that'll be kind of neat. It's three of the guys are the Dead Lake Trio that perform at the open jam at the Woodshed.
Mm-hmm.
So some folks may know that I'm not quite up on the music scene yet, being relatively new to Salt Lake, but
well, the Woodshed's one of our good venues, so yeah.
So if you like those guys, come on out, see them.
As artistic director, do you have a lot of power, I suppose, in choosing all these different productions?
I do choose the season. I get a lot of good input both from our audience and the staff and some of the artists that come regularly to work at Pioneer. But I guess, as they say, the buck stops here, and I kind of live or die by my decisions. But I'm excited about this. It is definitely, some of the shows are very different than what we normally do. Some are like the Music Man, kind of classic American theater.
Indeed.
But it's a range, so something for everybody.
Great. Well, thank you for joining us today.
Cool. It's been wonderful to be here. Thank you.
The 2015 Sundance Film Festival returns January 22nd to February 1st in Park City, Salt Lake City, Ogden, and Sundance, Utah. Don't miss your chance to see the latest and greatest independent films from the top filmmakers from around the globe. Now through October 8th, locals can register for a festival pass or ticket package, including the new Grand Pass, only available to locals. Visit sundance.org/festival to register.
I'm Rebecca.
I'm Danielle.
I'm Crystal.
And I'm Cherry. And if you like your geek news with a bit of a twist, then you'll love
Hello, Sweetie.
Hello, Sweetie podcast brings you the latest and greatest geek news and information from an all-female panel.
We'll bring you the most recent information about movies, TV, comic books,
video games, roller derby, pop culture, and more. Subscribe on iTunes and like us on Facebook.
For your weekly dose of geek culture from a female perspective, tune in to
Hello, Sweetie.
Plan B Theater will be returning for their 2014-2015 season with a brand new radio hour. This year's production, Episode 9, Grimm, will take a darker look of the stories of Rapunzel, Snow White, and the Juniper Tree, with voices provided by Bill Allred, Colleen Baum, Jay Perry, Teresa Sanderson, and Jason Tatum. Today we chat with director Cheryl Ann Clough and playwright Matthew Ivan Bennett. Cheryl and Matt, welcome. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you.
Hi. Thanks.
So you guys have some plays you're bringing to Salt Lake?
We have some plays.
We do.
What are you most excited for?
About Grimm? I think I will have succeeded if I see squirming and I hear groaning. That's what I'm personally excited for as a playwright. That's what I'm looking forward to with Grimm's fairy tales. Because when you look at the original, and not the 1857 version, which is what most people think of as the original, most copies that you buy in the store, that's what they are.
The blanded down versions?
They're more severe than Disney, but that's what people think of as dark. But the Grimms actually first published in 1812, and then they themselves watered them down over the process of about 40 years or so. And so from their first edition to their last edition, and the 1857 edition is still hardcore, like compared to, say, Disney's Snow White, which ends happily with her marrying the prince, and the 1857 Snow White ends with her clapping her mother in red hot iron shoes and making her dance to death. But the 1812 version is a little worse, actually.
And how is it worse?
It's worse because in 1857, it's her stepmother who's the evil witch. In 1812, you move back and it is her mother. It's just her mother. They just, over the years, they changed a lot of those tales where it was the parent to some evil step-parent.
An outside entity.
Yeah, and that's kind of where the cliche developed.
The wicked stepmother.
Yeah.
Yeah,
in their own editing.
It's interesting that they watered them down, supposedly, but they're still just horrific. And that's the thing I'm looking forward to, is people think that the original Grimm versions are dark. They're darker. Yeah. They're even darker.
Depending on your relationship with your parents, the dancing to death in chains, that might be the happy ending for some people.
Right.
Just
exactly. But you know, it being a Halloween show, there's even more pressure for it to be grotesque. And so I took the 1812 tales and told myself, okay, I've got to go one step further because it's Halloween. And then I've got to go another step further because people are going to be expecting them to be grim. So I've got to make them that much grimmer.
Are there specific grim stories that you're that are like the main storylines within the play?
We're doing Rapunzel, the Juniper Tree, and Little Snow White. We actually did a survey, and Snow White showed up on our survey. One of our producers had very enthusiastic about the Juniper Tree, and I am too, because it's this little known tale, which is just horrendous and heart-wrenching and terrible and wonderful.
Well, tell us a little bit about the Juniper Tree. I'm actually not familiar with that grim fairy tale.
The Juniper Tree actually is a stepmother situation. And
that one wasn't originally the mother. That's right. Always been the stepmother.
Yeah, it was the stepmother. And so some of them were stepmother because I guess maybe in the Middle Ages it was like divorce was uncommon. And so if you wound up in that situation, it was probably awful. I don't know.
It was more the spouse passed away and
yeah.
Time to move on.
Yeah, exactly. The stepmother, like, wants all of the resources and the monies to go to her own daughter and not her stepson. And so it all starts with her tricking him about there being this apple inside of a chest, and he opens it up and then she slams it down and cuts off his head. And that's how it starts. And then it gets worse from there.
It very does. Nice.
Yeah.
It really does. Yeah.
So are you guys going to be beheading anyone on stage?
With music, we will do beheading. This year, we're going to do something different where we're going to have Dave Evanoff on stage doing music, and I'll let you talk about that show.
Yeah, typically we do some live sound effects, you know, with different objects. This year, we've got live music, which we have had in the past, but it's going to be much more active in telling the story. Dave will be playing a lot of different handheld instruments, which will be visually very interesting for those who choose to come to be in the studio audience on the day of the broadcast. So it'll be really interesting to see how the music works out with the storytelling this time around. It'll be much different than in the past.
Yeah.
And very exciting, I think.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
So for the first and the third one, there'll be some Peter and the Wolfing type of sound effects underneath from Dave playing various instruments to voice the characters and the action of the play. And then the Juniper Tree actually is all going to be, quote, a cappella, unquote, with just the actors and the actors doing all of the sound effects with their mouths.
So as far as playwriting goes, how did you get started in that?
How did I get started in playwriting? Oh, you got to go back to high school, I guess. I was a member of the International Thespian Society, and I fancied myself an actor, but I wanted to get the 4 stars, you know, like by the end of my senior year, they give you the certificate and you get so many stars, and it wasn't ever worth anything. I never tell anybody that I'm an international thespian or anything. But in high school, it was a big thing. And so I looked at the requirements, and I saw the easiest way for me to get 4 stars would be to write a play. And so I wrote a play.
So I guess writing plays to get stars.
I started writing plays to get stars. To get gold stars.
Oh, right. I didn't know that about you.
I had written scenes like earlier than that and dialogue earlier than that, but that was my actual first play. And it was a 10-minute play called Tequila Weed Monkey, which was this sort of thinly veiled story about me and my ex-girlfriend getting back together in Cabo San Lucas, Mexico, 10 years after high school graduation.
And 10 minutes sounds short, but when you're writing, it's a really long time.
Yeah. No, it was, I'm sure, for everyone that read it. I think even. Plan B, I've been writing with them since 2005 and resident playwright since 2007. And I think this is the 5th radio hour that we've done. So the first one we did was Utah Ghost Stories. I took the Lavender Tale, which is this specific to Utah, but sort of this classic ghost story about a boy who goes to a dance and dances with a girl and And then she ends up to be dead.
Ends up
being a ghost, yeah. And then Exile, which was about John Baptiste, who was a grave robber here in Salt Lake. And it was they actually made a movie about him in the last year or so, but he was a real guy, and he robbed over 300 graves. So we did that one. We did Frankenstein. We did Alice in Wonderland together. Cheryl and I have done Sherlock Holmes and the Blue Carbuncle. And now Grimm's Fairy Tales.
Well, you definitely seem to lean more towards the horror and the scary stories.
I like doing, yeah. Sherlock Holmes was a lot of fun. We did that around Christmas time, but I have a special place for the Halloween.
Yeah, I do too. And even the
radio play. Too, wasn't it?
Pardon me?
Bill Allred was in that as well.
Yes, the Sherlock Holmes.
Yeah, I remember that. That was quite
and
a
And even when we've done them at Christmas, they tend to be on the dark side.
But well, it's good to have some darkness in Christmas.
Yes, right. That's right. That's right. So they've always been on the dark side, but it's fun to get back to the Halloween time slot where we can really get our dark on. So,
indeed. Yeah. Tell us a little bit about your history.
Well, I co-founded Plan B Theater Company back in 1991, and so I've been the managing director of the company since then. I've directed all of the radio hours, all 9 episodes, and I've designed sound for all of them. Some of the original music has been done by Dave Evanoff, who we've got coming back, like we said, this year.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been involved with Radio Hour since the beginning.
You couldn't let Jerry direct at least one of those? No, I'm just kidding.
No, no. he doesn't want to.
And she wrote one, too. Radio Poe.
Actually, right? Yeah, I did.
Yeah.
That was the first, very first Radio Hour. It was an adaptation of The Telltale Heart and an essay called Premature Burial, about being buried alive, which Poe was, you know, fascinated and horrified by that happening to him.
Indeed.
So yeah, that was the very first one, which indeed I did write. I forget about that. But it was fun.
Within this piece, who do you have acting that you're excited to take your words from page to the stage?
Well, we've got Radio Hour regulars and favorites like Jay Perry, who has probably done, I don't know, 50 voices in the 5 plays.
He has. Jay has participated in all of the Radio Hours since the beginning.
Since the beginning.
Yeah.
Since
the beginning of Radio Hour time.
And Teresa and Colleen Baum is going to be new this year, and she is a stellar local, very funny actress who is joining us.
Yeah. And it's always interesting to work with Bill Allred.
Indeed.
He's just a hoot to have in rehearsal. So excited to work with him again.
Yeah.
He's definitely a master thespian.
Yes, he is.
He's been my Watson, and it was our cycle pomp in Radio Hour Alice. We wrote it kind of like an underworld visualization, and he was the dude that hypnotized you.
Is there anything else about the piece that you guys would like to share with us?
Come prepared to squeal and cringe a little. I think there'll be some of that. I think there will be that. It's Grimm's Fairy Tales, and people normally associate those with children.
Yeah.
But you shouldn't in this case.
And they were not written for children initially. They were always very adult and originally very scholarly too. And like Matt said, over the years they watered them down a skosh. But yeah, you need to remember they were not originally written for children at all. They became popular with children.
You can't swear on public radio, so there won't be any of that. But there's no limit to what you can describe. So there will be some description.
All right. Well, thank you guys for joining us on the podcast.
Thank you.
Yeah, this is terrific. I like your room.
and they can see that out there.
Grimm will run October 15th at 7 p.m. for a single live show, which will also be broadcast in its entirety on KUER 90.1 FM. For tickets and more info on the show, visit planbtheater.org. That's Theater RE. Thanks for listening to Slug Soundwaves. For all things Slug Magazine, visit slugmag.com. Send us suggestions of what you'd like to hear on the show by emailing us at soundwaves@slugmag.com. Hit us up on Twitter at Slug Soundwaves. This podcast was created by Slug Magazine, produced by Gavin Sheehan, associate producers Alexander Ortega, Christian Schultz, and John Ford. Executive producer, Angela H. Brown. Theme was performed by Lindsay Heath and Mike Sasich. Main logo and art design by Nicholas Dowd. Technical design by Kate Colvin. Next week, we have Melissa Merlot and Marcus.